I know I feel better overall when I get outside and I get active. But when I don't have the right gear, especially when the weather is unpredictable this spring, it's harder to live that life that I really want. And that's why I'm sort of obsessed now with my Vessi shoes. I have two pairs, and I'm literally wearing at least one of them every day because Vessis are so comfortable, they're easy to get on and off when I'm on the go, and they are super stylish. I love how they look. Plus, get this, they're also 100% waterproof. And I really turn to my Stormburst high tops when I'm ready for a bit more adventuring out and about. They are so versatile, though. I can wear them for everyday errands and getting things done, or taking them into the elements, from beach days to walking around the city to a rainy day hike. Elevate your spring wardrobe with Vessi's Stormburst shoes. Discover more at vessi.com/newsworthy. Get your pair today to get an automatic 15% off your first purchase at checkout and be ready to step out in style, rain or shine. Trust me, you will not regret this. Go to vessi.com/newsworthy to get your new favorite shoes with an automatic 15% off your first purchase at checkout. Today is Thursday, January 9th. Why fears of war with Iran have now eased. The impact of a deadly plane crash on Canada and the rate of cancer deaths is down. Plus, the surprise announcement from Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, and the video streaming service bringing Hollywood to your smartphone. Then hang out after the news for Thing to Know Thursday's bonus interview. Welcome, welcome to The Newsworthy. All the day's news in less than 10 minutes. Fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. Thanks so much for being here. You ready? Let's do this. Well, tensions between the U.S. and Iran and fears that we could be heading for war have eased a bit now. Both countries' leaders have taken a step back, but will it last? Here's the latest. First, it's now confirmed there were no American or Iraqi deaths from Iran's revenge attack. Remember, in retaliation for the U.S. killing a top Iranian general last week, Iran sent missiles toward two bases in Iraq that house U.S. troops. No one died, and the Washington Post reports the U.S. military got a heads up hours in advance so they could take cover. Some officials say it was that quick movement to safety that saved American lives, though others say Iran's revenge attack was limited on purpose. Why? So Iran could seek revenge without actually causing a war. President Trump responded in an address to the nation yesterday. He said he's, quote, ready to embrace peace. He still promised tough new economic sanctions against Iran, but not another attack. Still, some wonder if this is all really over. Iran is known to support militia and terrorist groups, so another less obvious revenge is still possible later. We'll talk more about why this all started and what we can really expect next in today's Thing to Know Thursday interview segment after the news. Our guest expert breaks it down really well. In the meantime, there's new criticism and action on Capitol Hill. Democrats in the House plan to vote today on a measure to limit President Trump's military power against Iran, unless he gets the formal okay from Congress. At this point, it's not clear if it'll actually become law. Democrats and even some Republicans are not convinced that killing Major General Qasem Soleimani was the right move. They say there wasn't enough proof of an imminent attack to justify it and criticized a military briefing some of them got yesterday. But other Republicans say the president had plenty of authority and reason to attack. To be continued. There are some new questions about the Ukrainian jetliner that went down in Iran just hours after Iran's attack on military bases. The AP reports the timing of the plane crash has some aviation experts wondering whether that plane was shot down. But so far, U.S. officials say there's no proof of that. And Iran is still saying it appears to be technical issues. Remember, the Ukrainian jetliner went down near Iran's capital, killing all 176 people on board. Many passengers were on their way to Canada with a stop in Ukraine first. They were from several countries. 82 Iranians, at least 63 Canadians, and 11 Ukrainians died. In fact, the crash is apparently one of the worst losses of life for Canadians in any aviation disaster. The flag over Parliament there was lowered to half-staff, and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau promised to get to the bottom of what happened. All right, so here's a little good news. New stats show the number of U.S. cancer deaths is still going down. The American Cancer Society says from 2016 to 2017, the number of deaths from cancer went down by 2.2%, the most ever in a single year. The number has been dropping for more than two decades and has gone down nearly 30% since 1991, meaning close to 3 million fewer deaths. The American Cancer Society credits things like more advanced treatments and surgeries for lung and skin cancers, improving survival rates. Plus, fewer people are smoking, while more people are taking advantage of screenings and early detection. Cancer is still the second leading cause of death in the U.S., but experts are excited about the research and progress so far. Well, some big and controversial news from the Duke and Duchess of Sussex. Prince Harry and Meghan Markle say they'll be stepping back from their senior roles in the royal family, and People magazine calls it an unprecedented move. The couple posted their statement on Instagram saying they have plans to split their time between the UK and North America, allowing their baby to grow up with appreciation for royal tradition while also giving them the space for their next chapter in their lives. And they say they want to become financially independent. At this point, that sounds like it basically means they won't take their cut to help pay for official expenses. They also said they still support the Queen. So how does the Queen feel about this? Well, the Queen's spokesperson said the decision was in the early stage and these are, quote, complicated issues. So it seems this whole thing caught the rest of the royal family by surprise. In fact, the BBC is reporting no other royal, including the Queen or Prince William, was consulted before this announcement. And senior royals are said to be pretty hurt. All of this comes as the couple is involved in several lawsuits with the UK press, and they've both publicly shown their exhaustion and anger over all the media scrutiny. Prince Harry is sixth in line to the throne. The reactions to this latest news are mixed. Some Brits are showing their full support, while others are calling it sad. Either way, some Twitter users are having fun with it, saying instead of Brexit, where the UK is leaving the European Union, this is Megxit. Of course, there are still a lot of questions from where will they live to will they get paid work to what's this mean for the future of the royal family. Stay tuned. All right, we have more news ahead, but first a quick break for our sponsor today, Rothy's. And since we were just talking about Meghan Markle, she's actually been seen wearing Rothy's shoes. If you're not familiar, Rothy's makes stylish shoes for women and girls out of recycled plastic water bottles. Yes, they're sustainable fashion that is really chic and comfortable. You can wear them right out of the box with no break-in period, and they're even machine washable. I don't own a lot of flats other than sandals, but now because of Rothy's, I'm a big fan. I got a bright red pair of flats from the Merino collection of Rothy's, and I love them. I mostly throw them on with jeans to feel polished and stylish day or night while still being really comfortable. It's no wonder they have more than 1,000 near-perfect reviews. And for any guys listening, be sure to tell the women in your life about Rothy's. They'll want to check out all the different amazing styles and colors at rothys.com/newsworthy. Just go to Rothy's, R-O-T-H-Y-S, rothys.com/newsworthy to get yourself your new favorite flats. rothys.com/newsworthy. Now back to the news. Some of the world's top tennis stars, including Serena Williams and Roger Federer, will come together next week for charity. Mashable says the charity tennis match is happening in Melbourne, Australia, and will raise money for the bushfire relief efforts. Remember, Australia is suffering from more than 200 wildfires. Those fires have killed a couple dozen people and an estimated 500 million animals, some of which are only found in Australia, like koalas and kangaroos. Next week's tennis match should add to the millions of dollars raised so far to help. Pop star Justin Bieber announced some health issues. The pop star says he's battling Lyme disease. That's an illness you can get from tick bites, and if not treated early, it can affect your joints, heart, and nervous system. Bieber said on Instagram yesterday that he's been criticized for his appearance, but he says he looks sick because he is sick. He said on top of Lyme, he has chronic mono, and the two are affecting his skin, brain function, and energy, and overall health. Bieber said he'll be putting out a docu-series on YouTube soon to help people better understand the health issues he's been dealing with. Another upcoming video streaming service showed off its new shows at the Consumer Electronics Show this week. It's called Quibi, which stands for Quick Bites. So all the shows are meant to be 10 minutes or less and watched right on your smartphone. The CEO says it's not like YouTube because Quibi shows are higher quality, so Hollywood standards and Hollywood stars. And just like Netflix, Disney Plus, and more, it'll cost you a subscription fee to watch. Quibi starts at $5 a month. Will it be able to compete with all the other streaming and smartphone options? We'll find out when Quibi launches in April. For the second year in a row, the Academy Awards will not have a traditional host. Remember, Kevin Hart was supposed to host the Oscars last year, but stepped down after controversial tweets resurfaced. That was the first time the award show went hostless since 1989. So why no host again this year? That's not totally clear. Those in charge say they're repeating what worked well last year, and they say it'll still have star power with musical numbers and celebrity presenters. Oscar nominations will be announced next Monday, January 13th, and the Oscars are live February 9th. And that's it for the main news today, but it's now time for Thing to Know Thursday, where a different expert explains a different thing to know only on Thursdays after the news. And today, I want to help you better understand what's been happening between the U.S. and Iran over the last couple of weeks. From the U.S. killing a top Iranian commander, General Qasem Soleimani, to what led up to that, to what happens next. So my guest today is Ken Pollack. He's a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, where he works on Middle Eastern political military affairs. And before that, he's worked with the Brookings Institution, the National Security Council, and the CIA. So here's my conversation with Ken Pollack. Hi, Ken. Thanks so much for coming on the Newsworthy.
Thanks so much for having me on.
First, I want to help people better understand who Major General Qasem Soleimani was. What are a few facts we should know about him?
Sure. Well, he is or was the head of Iran's Quds Force. The Quds Force is part of Iran's Revolutionary Guard, and arguably it's the most important part. Soleimani himself was a brilliant figure. This was a man who, you know, in some ways it's hard to explain the position he occupied in the Iranian government because there's no comparable position in the U.S. government. He was chief diplomat and chief military strategist for Iran and the Middle East combined. And in that role, he basically ran the table across the Middle East. He was the guy who engineered the victory of the Assad regime in Syria. He was the guy who built up the Houthis and created such problems for the Saudis down in Yemen. He was the guy who built up the militias in Iraq that have more or less dominated Iraq ever since. He's the reason why Iran is increasingly emerging as the dominant power in the Middle East.
The Pentagon has said he's responsible for hundreds of American deaths in the past. Is that true? And why do you think the U.S. went after him now?
Sure. Well, let's start with the first part of your question. The answer to that is yes. Soleimani backed any number of insurgencies and terrorist campaigns. In particular, what the Pentagon is referring to when they make that charge is that it was the Iranians under Soleimani's direct orders that provided a variety of different Iraqi militia and insurgency groups with explosively forged projectiles, these improvised explosive devices that were tailor-made by Iran. There's no doubt about this. They were given to these Iraqi groups so that they could penetrate American armored vehicles. And we have extensive reporting indicating that the Iranians did it explicitly, saying to the Iraqis, use this to attack the Americans. And the Pentagon has calculated that I think the number is 806 Americans died as a result of these Iranian-built and supplied explosively formed projectiles. Why now? That's, you know, a heck of a question. I think that the media reports are more or less correct, as I understand it from my own sources. The president was very angry about the attack by an Iraqi militia on a U.S. Base in Iraq, up around Kirkuk. He was even more angry. If you remember, the United States bombed several sites owned by that militia. And in response, the Iranians organized a demonstration against the U.S. embassy that kind of attacked the outer perimeter of the embassy, burned one of the external buildings. And the president was apparently very angry about that as well. They had intelligence that indicated where Qasem Soleimani would be and that he would be in a position that put him in perfect circumstances for a drone strike. You knew that if you took the shot, you would absolutely kill Soleimani and you wouldn't kill any innocent bystanders. And so Trump decided to do it. He took the shot.
Even still, was this a surprise to you that the U.S. actually killed Soleimani?
Absolutely. This is a very big deal. And obviously, this was real justice for the families of those Americans who were killed at his hands. But, you know, the United States has had opportunities to kill him in the past. Under the George W. Bush administration, the U.S. military actively targeted him and on at least a couple of occasions thought they could have killed him, but never got authorization to do so. The Obama administration, too, was at least presented to them, do you want to try to do that? They turned it down entirely. And the rationale was always that the U.S. didn't want to kill Soleimani because the administration of the moment was too concerned about how the Iranians would react and that the ultimate repercussions would outweigh any gains from killing him.
So let's talk about Iran's promise to revenge, and then, sure enough, it's missile attacks on two bases in Iraq. But no Americans died. Do you think this was purposely a limited attack? What's the message Iran was trying to send?
Absolutely. I think that the Iranians have been telegraphing for the past 2 days that they felt it necessary. They felt that Trump had backed them into a corner and they had no choice but to respond in a direct military fashion and in an overt military fashion. You know, this isn't how Iran likes to do things. Iran, like most Middle Eastern countries, likes plausible deniability. They like attacking things and then not claiming credit to create some doubt, right? And to make it harder for the other side to respond. And let's be honest here. Part of that, and this is something that the Israelis do and the Iranians, Saudis, all Middle Eastern states tend to operate this way. They also do it because then it doesn't back the other side into a corner. They aren't compelled to respond. They might find reasons not to do so. Well, in this case, Trump did not allow Iran to do that. He publicly took credit for this, and that forced the Iranians to come back and say, okay, you've hit us and you've taken credit for it. Now we have to hit you. But they attacked only U.S. military targets. They attacked with only a handful of missiles. It's very unclear what the actual accuracy or the payload of these missiles were. They attacked very large bases. I've been on both of these facilities. In fact, I was at the Erbil facility not more than a couple of months ago. These are huge facilities. It would have been very difficult for them to actually kill Americans. And so I think that this world should see this as largely a box-checking exercise for the Iranians. You put us into a corner. You left us with, we felt, no choice but to retaliate openly. But we wanted to do it in a discreet, limited fashion so that you, the United States, you, Donald Trump, would not feel compelled to respond to that. Because this is not the war that the Iranians want to have.
So what do you think happens next? I mean, some people are saying this is over. Others are saying Iran could hit again when it's less expected, and they can, as you've mentioned, blame someone else for it.
Yep. I think both are correct. Think about it this way. I think that the direct military exchange is over. And I think that President Trump acknowledged that in his remarks after the missile attacks, saying that, the Iranians didn't do any damage, they didn't kill anyone, and the response of the United States is simply going to be more economic sanctions. That is President Trump saying, we're done. The Iranian retaliation was not painful. We're going to, in effect, declare victory and move on to the next thing. And I think that's exactly what Iran wanted also. But I don't think that this is over. I think that the Iranians have not sated their desire for revenge against the United States. I think that the emotions that they're feeling at the killing of Qasem Soleimani are very deep, very raw, and very real. I think that they still believe that they need to do a lot more damage to the United States. And I also think that the act itself, the decision to kill Soleimani, exactly as we were talking about just a few minutes ago, this was such an escalation on the part of the United States, doing something that the Iranians would find so enraging and provocative. I think that act has changed Tehran's calculus about Trump and the United States. I think that it's changed their sense of the region. I think that they now believe that Donald Trump is an extremely dangerous and unpredictable actor, that he doesn't understand the rules of the road of the Middle East, and that they need to get the United States out of the Middle East as best they can. So I think that there is still a residual and very important desire for revenge on Iran's part that has not been satisfied. But as you point out, the Iranians can be patient, and they prefer to always act in a time and place of their own choosing, and when they can do it with plausible deniability.
Be sure to share this episode today to help more people understand what's been going on. As always, you can find more information about all the stories mentioned in this episode right in today's show notes. Just go to thenewsworthy.com/show notes or look in your podcast app. The Newsworthy is here for you by 4 a.m. every weekday. We'll chat again tomorrow. Have a great day.